From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. If you looked at any news in September of 2014, you likely heard about the hack at Home Depot.
ABC 7 News at 5, on your side.
Another data breach at a large retailer has shoppers on alert once again.
This time, Home Depot, the latest victim, and could potentially be the largest.
I love that male anchor, by the way. Did you hear him groan after he said, once again?
Once again.
This time, Home...
But you know what? By any measure, this really was a giant disaster. Potentially many, many millions of customers' credit card information was now in the hands of some hackers, and the company at this point didn't have any answers about exactly what happened. And whenever I hear news like this, I always wonder what it's like for the leader in charge. Like, Home Depot is a giant company, and this is giant news, but you know, at the very top of it, there's one person who has to make the calls, who's making decisions, feeling a very unique kind of pressure. What's that like? What do you do as a leader in a crisis situation like this? And lucky for us, in the case of Home Depot's 2014 data breach at least, we get to hear that answer.
My name is Frank Blake. I'm the retired CEO and chairman of the Home Depot. I was at Home Depot from 2002 through to 2015.
And to give you a sense of just how stressful a situation this was for Frank, consider what happened the literal next day after news of the data breach came out. So Frank had a pre-scheduled conference with analysts that night. It was a dinner with like 20 analysts and investors who follow Home Depot, which is a public company, and he decides not to cancel it. So as news is swirling about Home Depot, the CEO shows up at this dinner with all of these people who were very, very interested in the company's finances. And you know how entrepreneurs will often give the advice of right before you're about to go on stage or into an important meeting or go into TV stations or whatever, do not look at your phone. Like, don't check your email, don't get any new information, nothing, because if you get bad info, you're going to be totally distracted from what you're about to do. That's advice I hear often. I follow it myself. Well, Frank does not take that advice.
On our phones, you can track sales. Hourly. And as I'm about to go into this meeting, I look at our sales figures and our sales are down 35% day, you know, up to that point in the day. So this would be the Wednesday following notification. And that was your heart drops to the floor and was really distressing. Because this is gonna threaten the very fabric of the company.
Frank couldn't say anything, of course, so he just had to put his phone away, swallow that dreadful piece of information, and put on a good show for the analysts at the dinner. But he knew he was about to embark upon a very, very long journey. On this episode of Problem Solvers, we are going to get into that journey. We learn how Frank Blake, then CEO of Home Depot, led the company through this gigantic crisis because, spoiler alert, Home Depot survived and thrived. And although the data breach resulted in many inevitable lawsuits, the company was generally praised for how it handled things. And today, Frank says that's because he made some very unorthodox decisions at the time, stuff that other companies in similar situations hadn't done, and frankly, were against the guidance of his corporate lawyers. So what did Frank do to keep Home Depot together? And how did he keep himself together? We'll get into it all right after this break. FedEx delivers millions of packages around the world. But for FedEx, it's not just about packages or pallets. It's about what those deliveries mean for people. Whether it's rekindling a long-lost connection between old friends, a new business opportunity, or providing much-needed hope after a natural disaster in the form of relief supplies, FedEx delivers more than just packages. FedEx delivers possibilities. Find out more at fedex.com/possibilities.
And now, our second sponsor.
Let me tell you my new three favorite letters. OCR. That stands for Optical Character Recognition, and it's the amazing technology inside the Neat company that's about to save you a lot of time. So, all right, let's back up and understand it all. What is the Neat company? It makes software that's used by small businesses to better manage expenses and spending. Neat enables you to capture expenses in several ways, either mobile phone by taking a picture of the receipt or by directly uploading a file or scanning and emailing. The system uses OCR, there it is, optical character recognition, to read that information off the paper, then put that information in a database in the cloud and integrate it with your accounting system like QuickBooks. So simple, so efficient. Neat is used by small businesses everywhere from landscapers to real estate brokers to side hustlers and will help you never lose an expense, maximize your IRS deductions, and just get more time back in your life. And right now, Neat is offering a 30-day free trial. Visit neat.com/problem solvers. Again, to take advantage of a 30-day free trial, visit neat.com/problem solvers. All right, we're back. So first, a few things to know about Frank. Today, he's retired from Home Depot, and by the way, he also has a great podcast called Crazy Good Turns about the amazing things people do for others. But his career involved working for very large institutions. He's a lawyer by training and worked for both George Bush when he was Reagan's vice president and also for George W. Bush when he was president. He eventually went over to GE, where he spent more than a decade as the head of business development and reported directly to Jack Welch. So, you know, the guy has experience. And also, he has experience working with data breaches, in a way. Throughout his time at Home Depot, there were moments when the company saw some potential signs of a data breach and had to investigate it. Nothing significant had ever happened, but it got him into the mindset of having to respond to something like that. So try as the company did to protect its data, there was always the possibility of something bad happening. And then one day, Frank got word that the worst really may have happened.
It happened right after Labor Day weekend, so early September. I got a call from our head of IT and then a discussion from our general counsel on concerns that there was a potential breach.
At this point, nobody knew what the damage was or even if there was damage, but Frank made two decisions immediately that would set the tone for everything going forward. Decision number one, they'd make a statement immediately. Prior to this, some other companies had waited months or even longer to tell the public about their data breaches, and it resulted in a lot of consumer anger and distrust and many terrible news cycles. Frank wanted to avoid that, so he decided Home Depot should make an announcement right there and then. They'd say there has been a potential breach, they don't have any more information right now, and they're actively investigating.
So it's not like you fully control the world of information and can wait, because it may leak out before you're prepared. And I've seen that in other instances, saw it before and after. There's a mistaken sense of controlling information that leaders have that just, it's just, as they say, it's mistaken. It's not right.
Right, because then the second that you lose control of that narrative, if you try to hold back information, you look like you're trying to hide something.
Exactly. So that's it, exactly. If you ask the question, okay, would a reasonable customer expect the leader of the company to tell him, her, what's happening? And the answer is yes, then do it. Because if they find out through other means, they're just going to lose confidence in you.
And decision number two was about how the company communicated. Here's the thing Home Depot's lawyers were not in love with.
All of our communications were going to be focused on our customers. And for that reason, it was very important to me that the pen would be held by our communications team and not our legal team.
The pen would be held by communications, not legal. I asked Frank, what exactly does that mean?
So you just start with something. Now move forward to, you know, supposition, well, we may have been breached, not sure, blah, blah, blah. Now you know you have been breached. So the first thing is, in my view, you say to your customers, we apologize. And we take responsibility for this, and we're going to hold you harmless. That's from a legal perspective. If I'm in my prior life as the lawyer advising the company, I may advise them, first, don't apologize or say you're sorry, because that acknowledges you or suggests you did something wrong. And don't say you're going to hold them harmless, because you may not want to hold them harmless, or you may want to argue about it. And so there are things, there are communications that your customers, in my opinion, want to hear that don't always comport with the best legal approach for the company. And this isn't just in breach discussions. This is in other areas all the time. As leaders, you make trade-offs on what am I preserving, my litigation stance or my relationship with my customers?
I mean, I really love that, because communicating with lawyers is an awful thing.
Well, as I say, I'm a lawyer,
yeah.
So I understand what it is you're communicating with someone who's, here's my job, as the lawyer is to lower your risk profile. That's my job. And I'm looking to future litigation. But that isn't necessarily the dominant concern for the organization.
How totally refreshing is that? I'm just going to throw my full weight behind that kind of thinking. In my humble opinion, communicating like a lawyer is worse than not communicating at all. I mean, as a consumer, I despise anything that smacks of a lawyer's influence. It makes me angry. Frank is a lawyer and stressed to me that he has a great respect for the profession, but I'll be honest, it is my true belief that lawyers create more problems than they solve. And in a case like this, consumers do not want to hear from a lawyer that's been trained to communicate like a self-protecting machine. They want to hear from human beings. So that's what Frank did. He decided that all communications coming out of Home Depot would be crafted by the communications team. Legal could look at them and weigh in, of course, but communications holds the pen. Now, remember, we're still in early days here. Home Depot has just learned that there might have been a data breach. Frank makes these critical decisions about how the company will communicate, and so they make a statement and have it run through comms. But soon, Home Depot has enough information to determine that, yes, in fact, data was breached, and a lot of it. It would turn out that about 40 million people had some payment card data stolen, and 52 to 53 million people had email addresses stolen. Now, what does a company do now? Well, it activates its response plan. Remember, it already had a plan drawn up based on lessons learned from watching other companies go through this and the many times that they had to think about it themselves when they thought maybe this was the time. So items on that list began getting ticked off. Set up a call center, communicate with the banks, and so on. But now there's also quite a lot of other things to do. And here, Frank wanted to make sure his company was seeing the problem through the right lens.
The instinct of an organization to self-preservation and, you know, sort of into that, I'm going to defend all the steps that I took over the last several years, is a strong and in many instances logical reaction. It's just not good. you need to be so focused on fixing the problem going forward and not looking back. And it sounds easy and obvious, just like focusing on the customer sounds easy and obvious, but they aren't easy and obvious at the time.
Right. You know, it's funny. Entrepreneurs are very focused on the idea of providing value. You know, you provide value to your customers and that's what keeps them coming back. But then when something goes wrong, we forget that whole value thing. Our instinct, as Frank says, is self-preservation. No value for you, only value for me. And that's not right. At a time like this, the value you provide is even more important. Customers need information. They need help. They need services. They need assurance. If you turn inward, you stop providing value. To get his team into the right mindset here, Frank gave them some healthy perspective.
The commentary I gave the team working on it was to just realize at the start that no one is going to be writing the article that says Home Depot suffers massive data breach, they did everything right. that article is never going to be written. So don't worry about all the CYA finger-pointing circular fire squad stuff that goes on in response to problems.
It all goes back to self-preservation. A minute ago, Frank said that an organization's instinct is towards self-preservation. But where does that come from? It comes from individuals who are worried about their own self-preservation. So here, he's trying to cut that off. He's telling his team that, listen, there's damage here. You aren't to blame, but you're in it now. So let's not worry about being blamed for anything, and let's just get to work.
I was really pleased because we had third-party consultants in, obviously, to help us because this is a very complex issue. That one of the comments they made to me was that they were surprised at how our team was not focused on the finger-pointing, but just focused going forward.
So that was the internal response. The external response was different, of course. Home Depot always erred on the side of more communication. Every time they learned more about the scope of the breach, they'd share that with the public. Frank knew this basically meant keeping Home Depot in the news. I mean, every announcement would bring more news coverage, but he figured that was better. Better to be transparent, that in the long run, this would build consumer trust. And he also spent a lot of time thinking about what had gone wrong with other companies' data breaches and how he could avoid that. He came to see some useful patterns about how, say, not doing one thing led to a problem elsewhere.
A lot of it was seeing what happened at Target and understanding. So one of the learnings from the Target data breach for me was the communication between Target and the banks from a distance. And this isn't a criticism of the Target folks involved. I'm giving you what I observed at a distance, was that communication wasn't as clear as it needed to be, which in turn made the communication to the consumer unclear.
Because imagine it. A customer goes to the ATM, puts their card in, and discovers that access to their card is blocked because of concerns about a data breach at Home Depot. That is a bad situation for Home Depot. And the way to solve it, Frank thought, was to work really closely with the banks. So what happens from here is really just a bunch of nuts and bolts. Getting the bad guys out of the system, detailing the damage, making consumers aware of it, setting up programs to help address any problems because of it, dealing with the lawsuits that followed from consumer groups, which would take years to settle. But by the time they were all done, Frank would be retired. And of course, back in those early days, there was a lot of hoping that everything they were doing was enough to keep the company healthy and keep its consumers coming back. And of course, that sales didn't drop. And on that last point about sales dropping, remember at the opening of our story how just a day after the breach was first detected, Frank walked into a pre-scheduled dinner with analysts having just learned that his sales had tanked by 35%? So, about that, let me play the rest of that audio of him telling that story.
Now, this is going to threaten the very fabric of the company at that level of sales loss. And that was a very difficult dinner to keep, you know, a calm demeanor. It turned out subsequently that the system just threw an error.
So it wasn't,
yeah.
So that wasn't actually a drop?
No. Because if that had happened, we wouldn't be having this positive call. No, it was a data error, and you know it was. So by the time I went to sleep that night, I knew no, actually the day was fine, but that was pretty bad.
Oh man, what
yeah.
A hell of a
yeah. That was
a hell
tough,
of a time.
That was
to
a
have
tough
a...
dinner.
Yeah,
that was a tough dinner, and then you can't. You know, your instinct is to be looking at the phone every other second, but you can't do that.
Unbelievable. I mean, on literally any other day, if their system had suddenly shown a 35% drop, Frank would have probably assumed it was a malfunction and they would have fixed the bug. But on that day, it seemed like it could be real. What awful timing. When I asked Frank to look back on the whole experience, I wondered what his major leadership takeaway was from it. Like, what was the most important insight, the thing that all decisions followed from? And he told me a phrase that I immediately jotted down. It's this: hierarchy of outcomes. That's what he had established at the very beginning. What is the most important outcome to happen here? What's at the very top of the list? Hierarchy of outcomes. And for Frank, for Home Depot, the top of the list was preserving the relationship with the consumer. It wasn't preserving their legal interests or worrying about bad press or thinking in terms of finances. It was the relationship with the customer. That's what guided everything, he says. And it's what any leader in any situation can use to guide them, no matter the severity of the crisis. What is the outcome you most desire? Identify that, then make the hard decisions to get there. And that's our episode. But wait, before you go, please hear me out on a few ways you can stay in touch with the show and contact me directly. First of all, if you like the show, it would be amazing if you subscribe to it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Problem Solvers. That way, you'll never miss an episode. We come out every Monday morning. Also, I love hearing from listeners. You can go to jasonpfeiffer.com. That's J-A-S-O-N, F as in Frank, E-I, F as in Frank, E-R.com, where you'll find my email address, social media handles, and also you can sign up for my monthly newsletter, The Pfeiffer Five, which is five monthly insights and bursts of inspiration for entrepreneurs. It's basically a collection of the ideas that excited me the most that month. So please go check it out. And that's again, jasonpfeiffer.com. And if you want to drop me a line directly, please let me know about the problems you've solved, and I might have you read the letter in a future episode of the show. We can all learn from each other, and that also means you. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media, and this episode was edited by Conrad Martin. We are also online at entrepreneur.com. Again, I'm Jason Pfeiffer. Thanks for listening, and now go solve some problems.